people always talk about, oh, this bad thing happened, and then now I'm wonderful, and then they skip the middle. What does the middle look like? I call it the pause. This is Heart of the Story, and I'm Nadine Kenny Johnstone. I'm a writer and a writing coach who helps women develop and publish their memoirs and essays. But most importantly, I'm a human who's always trying to figure out what my soul is saying. Each week, I'll share stories and tips of healing, hope, and following my heart so that you'll feel inspired to follow yours. Hello, my amazing listeners. Welcome to season two. We are going to have all of the things that you love. I'm going to do some talks. I'm going to read my essays where Michelle uses her wonderful music scoring talents. All of those good things. And there will be some other added perks as well. I am so excited to get back to reading to you from my writing. It gives me a goal every week to write new content and to share with you. And one of the biggest things that listeners have been asking about is, so how did the relocation go? And I'm going to be honest with you. It didn't go well. And I wanted to talk with you about this because I find that usually we only hear about things going swimmingly. I myself listen to podcasts every morning, and there's one in particular that I love, and I was listening to it the other day, and the host recently relocated. And she was talking about how amazing her new residence is and how wonderful the whole experience is. And I felt this deep shame in my heart that my own experience did not go well. And this shame felt really familiar. This is the kind of shame that I used to feel when Jamie and I were going through infertility and people all around us were talking about their smooth pregnancies or how it just happened so naturally, so quickly. And I felt a deep sense of shame. And it's happened in many other areas of my life where things seem to be going just wonderfully for other people and they're not going well in whatever area for me. And my immediate feeling is shame. And then I think, hold on. If I am feeling like this, then other people are feeling like this. And I know that I'm not alone. And when I used to feel like that when we were going through infertility, that's when I started writing about it. And that's when I started talking about it because I had a hunch that I wasn't the only one. So I wanted to talk with you today, honestly, about how our relocation attempt went. And I'm going to share an essay with you. And then we're going to talk about the fact that things don't always go as planned, and that is quite all right and nothing to be ashamed of. In fact, as of late, I've been reading books and watching shows about people who are facing challenges and how they're getting through the challenges. And I thought, you know what, if I'm only ever sharing successes with you, then you can't ever see how I'm getting through the hard stuff. So that's my goal today in being totally transparent and vulnerable and honest with you, is to show you how I'm getting through the muck. All right, so here goes. By the time we arrived in South Carolina on August 1st, which was to be our new residence, we were very, very weary and ready to call somewhere home. You see, in May of this year, we had sold our house in Illinois, purged our things, put necessities in storage, and had gone on the road for 2.5 months to see the people and places that had been off limits due to COVID lockdowns. And it was a glorious summer. Viewing the sunsets of Door County, Wisconsin, eating at a food truck festival in Traverse City, Michigan, hearing the roaring rapids of Niagara Falls, viewing the mountainous splendors of Lake George, paddleboarding in Lake Winnipesaukee, New Hampshire, laughing with loved ones in Maine, and exploring the tide pools on Cape Cod. It had also been a trying summer. Juggling working from the road and 24/7 childcare to our sweet, energetic 8-year-old son, and having no space in our tiny, tiny camper. The introvert in me was screaming, "I need alone time!" The mama in me was wishing for a couch so we could snuggle up as a family and watch a funny movie together. The partner in me was wishing for a date night so Jamie and I could have an actual conversation without being interrupted. So yes, we were stressed. The notion of selling all of your stuff and going on the road sounds awesome, and it is. But for some people, including me, by the end of our road trip, I found myself wishing for the space and coziness that a camper just couldn't provide. And I'll be honest, even though I love, love, love traveling, I started yearning for home again. You see, I hadn't yet dealt with the grief of losing my father to cancer in April. And I could sense that I needed somewhere to call home so that I could actually do that healing. But where was home? Throughout June and July, when we would meet people on the road and they'd say, "Where do you live?" they'd have to sit through a 20-minute explanation of our nomadic life. How we've lived in Massachusetts, Illinois, city, suburb, rural town, and now a camper. But the plan, as you know, if you've been following along with the podcast, was to relocate to South Carolina. Why South Carolina? Well, I hate winters. I loathe them. The gray skies make my heart gray. I'm perpetually cold all year round. And I wear fleece pajamas to bed every night of the year. Imagine how I fare in frigid months. So since South Carolina is warm all year round, sunnier than Illinois, near the ocean, and closer to our families than other warm locations, it seemed like a good decision. We had visited once, and it had seemed nice, and recently online we had found a family-friendly area with a good school, and we'd always planned on going somewhere warmer once our son was in college, but the pandemic had hit and our job situations had changed and remote work had become a possibility, so we decided on South Carolina, and we were going to take a leap. By the end of July, we were so ready to move out of the camper and into an actual building with actual walls and an actual fridge that did not look like it belonged in a dorm room. But more than that, after a summer on the road, we were ready to not feel so frazzled mentally and emotionally. We were ready to feel grounded and stable somewhere. We crossed our fingers, left our campground on Cape Cod at the end of July, and started driving the 17 hours to South Carolina, where we were supposed to move into a rental house, and all of our stuff was supposed to arrive from Illinois. Let me paint the picture for you. It's July 30th, and we're in a Starbucks parking lot somewhere in North Carolina. Jamie has driven through bumper-to-bumper traffic in New York City, D.C., pulling the camper behind him while people have repeatedly cut him off. He is done. I've been crammed in the passenger seat, working on my laptop for hours via my phone's sporadic hotspot that makes everything take triple the time. I am done. Gio has been trying to keep himself entertained, but he has read every book that we've brought on the road, and he is bored silly, ready to play with real toys and maybe even some other humans who are not his parents. Plus, he has a cold, non-COVID, thank goodness, but he is miserable and congested. He is done. Our two dogs have been crammed in the travel carrier and are in the hate part of their love-hate brotherhood. They are done. The betta fish, well, I'm pretty sure he's just happy he's still alive after slashing around in his little portable tank for 3 months. We are all done. Parked at Starbucks, a few hours away from our South Carolina rental home, I step out onto the blazing blacktop in the oppressive heat to call the moving company, because I've got this weird feeling in my stomach that despite the fact that a rep at the relocation management company has reassured us 3 times that our stuff would be delivered August 1st, I'm not really sure it will. We haven't gotten a call from the driver to say they're en route, and Illinois is not just a little trip to South Carolina. They should be on their way by now to meet us tomorrow. When Jamie and Gio head into the Starbucks, I take the dogs for a walk on the little patch of grass near the parking lot, and I call the moving company just to be sure. A very annoyed dispatcher answers, and much to my surprise, asks quite rudely what I'm talking about. "Your stuff is in Illinois," he says. "We haven't heard anything about a delivery date." Cue my head explosion. I'll spare you the many, many arguments I had with them. Suffice to say, we were about to move in to a house that would be empty for at least a week, possibly 2 or 3. It was a very quiet ride the rest of the way to South Carolina. Our already depleted souls were very, very depleted now. Let me say here that we are not stuff people. We are experience people. But Gio wanted to sleep on a bed, not a camper bench. And I wanted a simple desk to do my work from, not the milk crate I had turned upside down and put on picnic tables at campgrounds to make a desk. Jamie wanted to cook on his seasoned pans on a real stove. We weren't asking for much, but we were suddenly very aware of the many luxuries we had taken for granted that were now out of reach. When we started driving towards the coast, we were relieved to see palm trees and sunshine. But something else greeted us when we approached the town where our rental house was. Industry. Lots and lots of industry. Factories and cargo ships and plants. You see, we'd never seen in person the exact neighborhood we were about to move into. When we had visited South Carolina a while back, we had stayed in a different area. And so, while we know that any metropolis has its fair share of industry, we didn't know that factories, cargo ships, and plants were so close to the charming neighborhood of the rental house that we had recently secured. It certainly wasn't featured on the house's Zillow listing. So this, I thought, is what happens when you're in a crazy housing market and have to secure a home immediately, sight unseen. Though we had had a realtor show us around via FaceTime and had done endless research online, the industrial plants had not been part of the internet tours. As I looked out of the truck window at the puffing factories, my heartbeat quickened and my face grew warm. What, oh what, have we done? 2 miles later, we arrived in the quaintest, cutest town with charming front porches, palm trees, and bike paths. But I couldn't quite shake the feeling that we were surrounded by a pool of pollution. Turn a corner towards the water view, and there was another giant cargo ship just idling diesel fumes for hours. We pulled up to the house, and I was very, very quiet. Jamie and Gio hopped out onto the adorable street, and I tried to muster excitement, but I felt scared and alone. Moving to a warmer place was part of the plan, but moving into an empty home and wondering about all the factories nearby had not been part of the plan. It was a humid Sunday afternoon. The cicadas buzzing and sweat immediately drenched our shirts. We grabbed the key from the lockbox and went inside. It was dark, the shades drawn to combat the heat outside, and though it was a nice enough house, the energy felt sad. The owner had not done a great deal to freshen up the place after the previous tenants had moved out. Gouges and damage had been neglected. The garage had clutter in it. I tried to shake my sad feeling as we walked around deciding what would go where whenever it was that our furniture actually arrived. But where were we going to sleep tonight? Now that was a good question. Our camper was in the driveway, but the AC would not run on our solar panels alone. And the house didn't have the electric ampage that we needed to plug in. So we would definitely melt in the southern heat. After 2.5 months at campgrounds, we were over it, and we wanted a decent shower and a comfy bed. So we opted to stay in a hotel. We felt fortunate to have this as an option, but still, I couldn't ignore the terrifying notion that, at that moment, we had no real home. The mama bear in me panicked, a primal instinct popping up. I wanted to find a secure, safe, welcoming, homey environment for my family. When we finally got to said hotel and hauled in all the things we thought we might need until our furniture arrived, we were spent and cranky. We decided to go for a walk on the beach to heal our souls a little bit. But as Gio ran ahead and splashed in the surf, I felt a wave of sobs coming on. Here we were. The sun was shining, the air was warm. That's what we'd been after, right? But I felt utterly alone. There was no welcome party. We knew no one here. There was no one to hug us and say it would be okay. No one to say you can stay with us until your stuff arrives. But Jamie and I had each other, right? Well, we should have, but we were so consumed in our individual stress, so strained by the whole summer of no couples time, that we felt disconnected. We would usually hold hands as we walked, but now we walked silently, separately. All around us, families splashed and laughed, but my eyes frantically searched for a place I could sob in private, away from Gio. All summer, I had had no alone time to process any emotions. As a mother around Gio all the time, I felt like I couldn't cry about the deep wounds that I had experienced. Deep, deep grief. The year and a half of time with my very own family, lost to the fears of the pandemic, not letting anyone inside our home. So we had been alone, Jamie and I, in everything, having to be parents and teachers and friends and playmates to our little boy. The deep grief of losing my father all too soon when he passed at age 57 in April. I hadn't fully processed that we had sold a lovely home in Illinois, one that we were ready to leave, but one that I still missed nonetheless. So it built up these emotions, building and building and building. There was no more room in my soul, and so it all flowed out. I sobbed right there on the beach, turning my body away from our boy. My face buried in my hands, I heaved. Jamie enveloped me, but even his touch felt foreign. So strained were we from the road, from the pandemic, from losing my father in April. That night, lying in bed in the strange hotel room, sounds of the ocean were nearby, but I was not soothed. I tossed and turned in bed, my heart panicked with anxiety. What do we do? I felt like a lost child. I so badly wanted comfort, someone to hold me and feed me and tuck me into a comforting little home and say everything was going to be all right. The next day, we took Gio to camp, which had been our plan all along, so that he could meet kids in the area. It was so hard to leave him alone in the heat with strangers, but we also needed time to process so many emotions. That 3-hour block was only the second or third time in 1.5 years that Jamie and I had to ourselves, and I used most of it to cry as we drove around unfamiliar territory with the live oaks and their dangling peat moss as our only company. What would make us feel more at home in our empty house? We needed to feel grounded, rooted, nourished. So we devised a plan. We would start by grocery shopping. We had not had the luxury of a full fridge in 3 months. Our tiny camper fridge held maybe 2 days' worth of items, and it did not keep up to temp when unplugged on travel days. So now we could finally get a few days' worth of healthy food and cook a meal at the rental house with the few utensils that we had had on the road with us. That afternoon, after we picked Gio up from camp, we headed to the house. We decided to fluff our nest a bit, even if we only had a few feathers. While Jamie cooked in the kitchen, I got Gio set up to take a nice warm bath, another luxury after 3 months of low-pressure camper showers. I stood in the upstairs hallway, listening to Jamie in his happy place, the kitchen, cooking away as Brothers Osborne played in the background, and Gio singing to himself in the bathroom. I thought maybe we might just be all right. Still, I had a deep knot in my stomach and no appetite, despite the wonderful smells of chicken and broccoli wafting up the stairs. After Gio was splashing around a bit, he called out to me, "Mom, the water looks brown." "What?" Sure enough, upon investigation, the bathwater had a rust-colored tint to it. My panic returned. What the hell was going on? I stormed down the stairs to tell Jamie, and as I rounded the corner, I saw the sweetest sight. Jamie had taken all of our camping chairs and our folding table and had set them up in the dining room and had lit a candle and put it on the little table. Despite having no furniture, he was trying to make the place homey. I hated to break the news, but Gio ran down the stairs after me. "Dad, the water's brown," he shouted. What kind of water had we just washed all of our produce and our bodies in? After texts with the owner, the theory was that maybe something had happened to the hot water heater and the rust sediment had gotten into the water. Clean water. Another luxury I had once taken for granted. Jamie's lovely dinner started turning cold as we went back and forth with the owner about what was going on. But then came the straw that broke the camel's back. The owner said that a plumber would be out in a week. The owner, who lived in another state, was trying to manage the property using his home warranty, apparently even for emergency situations. 7 days he expected us to go without clean, safe, usable water. No. 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 Everything in my body said no. I did not want to be at the mercy of this man who thought my family should live in a house without clean water. If this is how we were being treated 2 days in, it did not bode well for the future. We drove back to the hotel that night, as sad and low as we had ever been. To boot, I had caught the cold the Geo had had, and I felt awful. It was as if my body was exuding how my heart felt. Exhausted. Congested. I lay in the sterile hotel room all night long, awake, yearning for home. But where was home? I wasn't quite sure. It felt like we had so much healing to do, but we had no stable, safe place to do so in. Geo needed structure, predictability, and routine to support his ADHD. Jamie and I needed lots of time to rekindle our connection. I needed mental and emotional support. We needed a village. I slipped out of the hotel room early in the morning to walk the beach and gain perspective, feeling as alone and as heartbroken as I ever had. And when I called my mom and sister, they could have said, "Just come home." But they didn't. They both said that they supported whatever decision I made to stay or go. Their selflessness made me cry. But deep in my bones, I knew it was decision time. There was a ticking clock. Our furniture would eventually be packed up in a truck and driven to South Carolina. Or I could tell them to pause and hold it, keep storing it until we gave them new directions. School was due to start the following week. This was the biggest driver. We needed stability for Geo. After the year and a half he had had of remote learning with no socialization and not that much structure, this was my biggest priority. We needed to get our family settled somewhere, and we needed to do it soon. This wasn't easy, though, because South Carolina had its charm. The sun was shining, the ocean was calling. Should we stay? I started looking around at other neighborhoods in South Carolina, but because the housing market was what it was, no houses were popping up for rent. So I started thinking about other warm places. We had loved Anna Maria Island in Florida when we had visited, but when I started Googling about maybe renting a place there, I learned that school was starting the next day and a giant red tide surge had come in, killing millions of fish, making the water unswimmable and the air unbreathable. What the heck was happening to our world. Going back to Illinois did not solve all of our problems either. I'd be right back to dealing with winters again. But here's the thing about clarity. Sometimes you might not know what the next best thing is, but you do know what's not the next best thing. And right now, this house with its unattentive landlord and our lack of support system here did not feel like the next best thing. That day, we dropped Gio off for camp. And during the 3 hours, Jamie and I sat in a Trader Joe's parking lot in our truck, talking and sobbing. Well, I was doing the sobbing. And I just kept uttering the words that were rising from my gut. I can't. I can't. I just can't. Jamie had all of the same concerns as I did. But the difference was that he wasn't as tied still to Illinois as I was. My family was there, whereas he was probably ready to move on to somewhere else. But also, I think he could see that I could not go on this way any longer. And so he supported the decision that we needed to find a different plan. Jamie nodded and got out of the car. He came across to the passenger side and said, "Okay, Nader, okay." Great relief washed over me, but it was quickly replaced by panic. What the heck do we do now? We drove to camp to pick Gio up, and he ran over to us, sobbing, too. Something had happened, and another kid had knocked into Gio on the slide, and now Gio was wailing. He ran up to us, red-faced and sweaty, tears all over his cheeks. He buried his head in my chest. "I just want to go home," he said. And all I could say was, "Me too, buddy. Me too." But where was home? I've never quit anything in my life. This is a sad but true statement. Nothing. The times when I had walked away from something was after giving it years and years of my time and attention. But I'd never quit anything that I had barely started. That's how much of an overachiever I am. I see things through. I give it my all. So when we ultimately left South Carolina, I wasn't joyous. On the 15-hour ride back to Illinois, I was filled with regret. What if we had just stayed the course? Surely some good would have come of it. Plus, I was a leaper. I had made plenty of big moves, and they had all paid off. Why quit now when we were so, so close? I felt like a bride who had called off the wedding. Not only was it embarrassing, it was heartbreaking. A dream dashed. Thoughts of what might have been. But I kept reminding myself of the deep, guttural reaction I had had when we had arrived in South Carolina. The sobbing, the misery. There was a reason I'd had that reaction. The next weeks were a special form of hell, in which we had to undo everything we'd set up in order to relocate. Utilities, school, doctors, and then arrange things to be back in Illinois for a bit. 2 weeks later, we moved into a tiny rental house in Illinois. and our lovely moving company delivered our items, many of which were broken. But my mom and sister were there, helping us move in. I watched as my sister patiently helped Gio organize his room, so expertly dealing with his ADHD. I watched my mom unpack boxes in the kitchen and put stuff away. My God, I had missed this so much in the year and a half of the pandemic when we had been too nervous and cautious to have them in our home. We know that Illinois is likely not a long-term plan. The winters always do me in. But I'm looking at my life with a wonder for all the things that I had taken for granted before the pandemic and before going on the road. A roof over our head, my family inside, unmasked, helping us. The safety of familiarity and a place to call home, even if it's only for a little while. So, thank you, friends, for listening to my essay. And so, I've been studying this really, truly. So let me share what I've noticed about my healing journey with you. First and foremost, what always happens right after the difficult thing is that I find that I start nesting. Nesting. I turn inward, mentally, physically, emotionally. I find myself sitting in cozy corners with a blanket and my journal, going to the library with my journal, going to a coffee shop with my journal and finding a quiet spot. And I start creating support around me. Think of a nest with all the twigs. Both in physical comforts, blankets, candles, smells that I appreciate, patches of sunlight, nature, but also in the sense of metaphorical nest building, journaling, meditating, talking to myself. I become devoted to turning inward during this time. And it just starts kind of happening subconsciously. I find myself grabbing a notebook more and more. So when we got to Illinois, in the midst of the unpacking, getting Gio enrolled in a school, trying to get him into a routine, working, etc., I made it a point to take my journal and go into little nooks wherever and write and write and write. So I found myself going to the local library and reserving a study room every day for a couple of hours. And while there were a million responsibilities pressing against me, I said, no. And I journaled until every fear and every anxiety and every bit of anger was poured onto those pages so that they could no longer fully fester inside of my body. And I found that as I dumped out all of that onto the page, what emerged was deep, deep self-compassion. I started seeing myself from the outside and going, oh, honey, you have been through it. Rather than listening to the shame voice that we all have in our heads that was trying to condemn me for all the things I could have, would have, should have done. If only I had the hindsight that I had now after the fact, right? That voice is not helpful at all. So I journaled and I journaled and I journaled until the deepest, most self-compassionate voice emerged and just kept saying things like, oh, sweetheart, my goodness, what a whirlwind. Oh, shh, rest now. I know when I get to that voice, that something has been processed. So I started the journaling again, really dedicated to it. I always journal here and there, but this was like deep introspective reflection and writing. And then I did some other important things. I kept on making the eggs. That's what I call it. So years ago, when Jamie and I were going through infertility and we were experiencing loss after loss, I didn't know what the heck to do. We were so distraught. And all I could do each morning, I remember this, it was the transition from fall into winter when some of the hardest stuff happened. And the mornings I would wake up and it would be chilly in the kitchen, and I would go downstairs and I would take out the frying pan, take out the olive oil, the salt, pepper, the eggs, and I would light the fire on the stovetop, put the oil in the pan, let it heat. I would crack the eggs. Wait till I started seeing the white forming, season them, flip them, make sure that they were kind of crispy on the edges, but then beautiful golden yolk in the middle. And I would plate them and I would serve Jamie and myself. And he would make the tea with the tea kettle water, and he would make rooibos tea with a hint of blueberry, and he would stir in the honey, and we would eat our eggs, and we would drink our tea. And each night when I would go to bed with a broken, broken heart, the one little glimmer of joy that came to me was that I would get to make and eat my eggs in the morning, share a meal with Jamie, and that he would offer me tea. This is no small thing, my friends. I have found that in the deepest moments of loss, and my goodness, have we had quite a time of it lately, that going through these little daily rituals is everything. The things that seem like a chore become the things that get us through. And so these past couple of months, that's what it's been for me. And I'll go through them with you. Here are the things that when I go to bed, if and when I feel heartbroken, I sit there and I go, tomorrow, I get to wake up in the pre-dawn. I get to tie up my running shoes. I get to walk outside to see the beautiful trees. And I get to start moving my body in the golden light. I get to see the sun come up. I get to see the plants along my walk, the brown-eyed Susans that have just had their season. I get to smell the fragrant bushes and leaves and plants. I get to listen to inspiring podcasts. And by the time I come back in the morning to the quiet house, Jamie and Gio are still asleep. I feel like a new person. And then when I hear Gio's little footsteps hop down off of his bed and then walk around upstairs, and he and Jamie come down the stairs and I get to hug them. And then we get to eat breakfast together. The eggs, of course. I look forward to that, even when Gio says he's sick of eggs and he wants something else. And then I look forward to drinking my drink, which is chocolate and chaga mixed together. And then I look forward to the moment when Jamie takes Gio to school and the house is quiet and I can light my candles and I can meditate or do yoga nidra, and then I can journal. And then I look forward to the fact that I get to work with amazing, talented women writers from a desk by a window that looks out at a tree. And then I look forward to later taking a walk with Jamie, getting filled in about what's going on in his world, connecting with him in a way that we weren't able to do when we were 24/7 childcare. And then we look forward to picking up Gio from school and hearing about his day. And then I look forward in the afternoons to playing with Gio in the backyard, jumping on his trampoline with him, smelling Jamie's cooking, wafting out from the open windows, going inside, eating a meal together, doing a little bit more work while Gio gets ready for bed, then cuddling together and saying goodnight, and then having some reading and puppy snuggle time with their two dogs at the very end of the evening, and then giving myself some good rest. Oh, the wonders that we take for granted in ordinary times. But these are the things that I look forward to. And Glennon Doyle says structure is liberating, and I fully agree. During these times of healing, what I realize is that I crave routine and ritual. I crave structure and safety and stability because it allows time and space for my body to heal. And I can't remember what wise person said it, but they said that we're kind of like a cake. When a cake is baking, the outsides may look firm, but the insides are still, you know, a little woozy woggly, not fully baked through. And that's what I think of with the healing process, is that I need for the structure and the routine to create the stability around me so that my fragile insides can heal. So the routines create that space. And what I find is that when I'm trying to heal, I turn to books and I turn to authors. Their words become my scripture. So it just so happened that right when all of this was going on, that Leanna Tankersley's book, Hope Anyway, came out. And it became my healing guide. So if any of you listeners know her, my dream would be to get her on the show so I can tell her just how impactful her book was. So something she said really, really stuck with me. In her book, she talked about how she went through a divorce that was not her doing. It was unexpected to her. But she talks about her healing process. And one day as she was reflecting, She was being introspective, and these words came to her. You are finding your person, and your person is you. You are finding your person, and your person is you. Now, of course, this does not mean we don't need a village while we're healing. That's one of the other steps I'm going to talk about. We do. But we end up finding ourselves. You discover yourself. You fall in love with yourself, with your own self-compassion, your own strength. You become very tender with yourself. And that is what always happens when I go through the healing journey. So many women have been a part of that process for me. I've been listening to Jen Hatmaker. Her most recent podcast series talked about other women who have been flipping the script, meaning that they had something happen in their life that didn't go according to plan, and they had to redirect and how they did it. So I've been listening to her. I've been listening to and reading Glennon Doyle. I have been devouring the book Radiant Rest by Tracy Stanley and reminding myself how important rest is, how important rest is. And every time I go to rest and I pause, I'm reminded that this time is a cocooning of sorts. People always talk about, oh, this bad thing happened, and then now I'm wonderful, and then they skip the middle. What does the middle look like? I call it the pause. It is the pause. It seems as if nothing fancy is happening on the outside, right? We're just making the eggs. But everything is happening on the inside. I felt like when we were going through this hard relocation attempt that the world was spinning. I didn't know which way was up or down, left or right, and I just needed to say, hold on, let me get my bearings. But you know what? The world does not really give people permission to pause. We are a go, go, go trained society. But the pause is necessary. It is necessary in the healing. For me, I felt the need to get grounded again, get my feet and my heart and my mind planted for a moment so I can make sense of what just happened and then reflect so that then at some point we can come up with a new plan. Not just dive right into something else. So the pause is necessary. And as we're pausing, for me, what was helpful and what has been helpful is gathering my village, asking my mom to babysit Gio on Wednesdays so Jamie and I can have very needed date nights. We can walk, we can talk, we can go have a glass of wine and just sit and be in each other's company uninterrupted. I've been having gatherings with my mom, my sister's fiance, where we get to eat and laugh and talk. I have called upon my dear holistic mentor, Ann Baker, who is so wise beyond belief. She has been instrumental in my growth over the past few years. And she said something the other day. We meet on Tuesday afternoons. She said, here's the thing about the blank slate, because I was telling her how difficult it can be when everything you thought was going to happen is no longer there, and everything has kind of been stripped away. She said, but here's the thing about the blank slate. You can create anew the kind of life that you're longing for. What do you want that to look like? And I thought, well, that's interesting. The blank slate allows us to create. And I'm a creator, and Jamie's a creator. We're creative people. What might we create? And so all of this has allowed for me to be devoted to myself, to remember parts of myself, to have even new parts of myself emerge and flourish. So what I want to say to you is that I see you wherever you are in the world. If you feel like, holy smokes, what just happened? If you feel like things did not go according to plan in your life, if you are feeling heartbroken, if you are grieving, I see you. I hope that you feel my presence, my arms reaching out in a big hug to you. So I wanted to offer you a little meditation here so that maybe it can be part of your healing journey. I hope that it helps. Take a deep breath in and out. One more. Sigh it out, sigh it out. Oh, honey, you've been through it, haven't you? Sigh it out. So as you acknowledge the plans that didn't work out, or the whirlwind of overwhelm, you just don't know where to turn or what's next. Let's focus on pausing today. Let's focus on gathering ourselves. So we're going to visualize some things, and you can do this physically too, but first you can visualize it and then see if you can create it in your actual space. So I want us to create the coziest nest in our minds that we can possibly think of. It's in your favorite spot outside or inside, where the sunlight hits just right, or the breeze blows the way you like it. And you're going to set up a little nest for yourself with your softest blankets, your favorite candles, your favorite smells, your most lovely journal, your favorite mug of tea, and you're just going to relish in it, in this space you've created for yourself. What belongs there in this nurturing cocoon? What makes you feel really, really good? Remember, I've said in the past, imagine as if you're setting up this space for someone you love so much. That's how much you want to create this lovely, luxurious space. And And I want you to imagine yourself sitting or lying in that space, just held and consumed with love, supported, nurtured. And you're going to give yourself whatever it is you need physically, the right blanket if you're cold, the right position that your body feels good. But you're also going to give yourself whatever you need emotionally, mentally. So tune into your heart, maybe place your hands there and ask yourself, what do I need? And the answer always comes. Might be one word, a little phrase, don't discount it. It might be the most simple thing. Maybe it's, you need rest, honey. You need a nap. You need a bath. You need a mug of tea. You need time alone. You need to make that call. It'll tell you what you need. And imagine what it feels like if you gave yourself exactly what you needed. Shower yourself with it. Give yourself that gift of healing. And it might be hard to receive so much love, so much nourishment, and that's okay. Maybe you can only handle little bits at a time. That's all right. See if you can soften and receive. That's your work. That's what's most important right now. Trying to let yourself receive the very love and support that you need. This is how we gather ourselves again. This is what happens in the pause before we're ready to move on. We are cocooned and supported and giving ourselves nourishment. Take another breath. See if you can bask in the glow of being your own person. You are the one you've been waiting for, as Leanna says. Doesn't mean that you can't call upon other people. Certainly not. It just means that we look far and wide outside ourselves when we are wonderful healers. We are wonderful caretakers for our souls. And sometimes it's helpful to remember how perfectly suited we are to take care of us. How good it feels to heal. Okay, take one last deep breath. And if you're ready, your eyes can flutter open, or if you're walking, you can take a moment of pause to soak in everything that just happened. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of you for taking the time to nurture yourself and to nourish yourself. So, we have some really wonderful things in this season too. And one of them is that you've been sending such amazing notes in my email and in my Instagram DMs. I want to hear your voices. I want to set up a sort of voicemail, but let's make it really easy. What you can do is if you have a comment or a question that you want me to address on the show, you can leave a voice memo on my Instagram account, Nadine Kenny Johnstone, in my DMs. If you have a question, a comment, a success that you want to share, like you've been doing some of this good soul work, or maybe there's a writing success that you want to share, I want to hear it all. Okay. So over at Nadine Kenny Johnstone on Instagram, you can send me a voice memo and I'll play some at the end of upcoming episodes. The other thing that I wanted to announce is that on Monday, October 4th, I am leading a free workshop. So you always hear me talk about my writer workout community that meets on Mondays at 12 o'clock. And so many people have emailed me to say, I want to try it out. Can I try it out? So the answer is yes. Bring your friends, bring all the writers you know, try it out, free class. On Monday, October 4th at noon Central Time, you get the Zoom link by going to NadineKennyJohnstone.com, click on the workshops tab, and you'll be able to see the thing that says free writer workout class. And then it'll give you all the good instructions for signing up so that you'll get the email with the Zoom link. And even if you can't make it, you can still get the recording, but I hope that you'll come live, because if you come live, you get entered into a drawing and one lucky person will get a free month of Writer Workout membership. I hope to see you and your friends on Monday. And remember, every heart has a story and every story has a heart. See you next week.